The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia.
The Bills will improve to 6-2 on the season as the Bills get a big, convincing victory over the homestanding Seattle Seahawks here. Your final 31-10.
I thought our fan base showed up, man, big time. Not surprising, but never taking that for granted. The red, white, and blue of the Buffalo Bills showed up all the way out here in the Northwest and couldn't be more grateful.
I do want to shout out Bills Mafia because that was a crazy scene walking off the field to the thousands of fans. So appreciate them for coming out and hopefully they enjoyed the game.
We know what we're capable of doing. So just, like I said, you know, sticking to the details, the preparation that we put in throughout the week and, you know, one play at a time mentality.
Mike Danger.
It's a victory Monday and that feels like a win for the Sports Bar.
Gene Battaglia.
I look at this Bills team. They look like they're peaking at the right time here.
95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan. Rochester.
All right, James Cook. Let's start with James Cook running for over 100 yards on 17 carries, averaging 6.5 yards per rush, catching three balls for 22 yards, 133 total yards from scrimmage, a couple of touchdowns. James Cook, a man on a mission. The Fan Rochester's man on a mission, brought to you by the Open Door Mission. Go to opendoormission.com to see how you can guarantee a win for someone today.
Wow, the Bills showing more balance in this attack. And look, it was just a lot of fun. We'll talk to Ryan Talbot, NewYorkUpstate.com. He'll be joining us coming up at the bottom of the hour. So more Bills Seahawks talk, but we have takes from around the rest of the league, Danger.
So there's a team and a coach and a player to watch. And I'm not just saying this because they're in the NFC North. I'm not saying this because of the chief rival of my team. But I am truly impressed with what Green Bay has done. Green Bay was a preseason darling, but you have to give it up to Matt LaFleur. He's gotten wins early in the season with Jordan Love out, Malik Willis in. Willis relieving Love again yesterday. Now they get the win in Jacksonville in walk-off fashion. And by the way, yesterday's action, for it being a schedule that going in, you're probably looking like, Really competitive games, lots of late lead changes, lots of down-to-the-wire endings, and a really unbelievable Sunday of football. We don't the Love groin injury. I guess the MRI results are out and it's negative. So who knows if he misses more time? But if the Packers keep winning with Willis behind center, LaFleur is my coach of the year, and it's not even close. Detroit is coming to Lambeau on Sunday. That's your test. They need Jordan Love to win a Super Bowl, but winning with Malik Willis is something that no one could have predicted for this team this season. I just think it's an unbelievable coaching job by Matt LaFleur.
I think that division is so far ahead of every other division, Danger, that, okay, if it's Detroit that wins the division and not Green Bay, all right, and Green Bay is the five, okay, so, or vice versa. Like, they're going and they're going to defeat the four, unless that ends up being San Francisco, some weird sort of thing. But the Commanders, a really nice story, but if they exited early or whoever comes out of the South, okay, good luck with that. If it's Tampa without any wide receivers, I think Green Bay is talented enough to go and win on the road. In fact, I'd like them to go to the Super Bowl. I'm going to stick to that. Detroit being a team that, you know, certainly that's going to be a fantastic matchup. Also, one other note. We talked to PJ Glasser every Wednesday. There were two games we identified, one in the pros and one in the college level. The line looked really fishy. And when we asked PJ about it, it was sharp money going on that. And Matt, the pro one, fit in that narrow window. Son of a gun, the Packers were favored by four. They only win by three.
Yeah.
That looks so fishy, and they knew.
I tailed PJ on some of his picks from the NFL yesterday. I had a good day yesterday. I went 6-1 with my picks. Mm-hmm. Daddy went against PJ's pick of the Seahawks with the points. I just, before that game, I'm like, you know what? If I want to put my name on it, let me put some money behind it as well. The Bills are going to cover. They're going to win by more than, what was it, three and a half. But I did take Jacksonville plus 3.5, cha-ching. I did take the Browns and the points against the Ravens, got that one. I took Indianapolis plus the points, and these were all picks that PJ gave us on Wednesday. I love having guys like PJ on to spark the discussion, to spark the debate, to identify where those lines look a little bit fishy and where you can find the value. And I think the college one that you're talking about was UCF?
Yeah, I thought BYU, and like, oh, that makes sense. Why is this basically a pick 'em when UCF is 3-4, and BYU is undefeated, and it's not like BYU hasn't played anybody. BYU wins, they cover the small spread of like, okay, so that was one where we picked out like, no, it's the kids from BYU got it done. BYU, Indiana, like with this new playoff, we would never be discussing these teams here.
Yeah, we won't be talking about the midshipmen anymore, though. I think that the Notre Dame win is a good story, nice story. Notre Dame kind of taking care of them and flicking them off their shoulder. Like, okay, next case.
Yeah. You see players tap out in the NFL frequently, right? The defensive line come in and out. You're rotating. A wide receiver runs 50 yards downfield. Okay, I need a play off. Heck, we saw Stephon Diggs do that every other play last year, but I digress. I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback in the NFL do this until yesterday, in case you missed it. Colts quarterback Anthony Richardson had a few consecutive running plays, and that's when he put his head to his helmet. Like, wait a second. The quarterback's asking him to come out? Sure enough, Joe Flacco goes in. It was third and long. Look, it looks bad, but danger, the one play, that's not the problem here. Let's dig into the problem in Indianapolis, because I think we have a big enough sample size to know that Richardson had better start showing some improvement, or else. Since 2000, there have been 225 quarterbacks with at least 250 passing attempts. I think that's a good sample size, 250. Where does Richardson rank? Of those 225, he's fourth from the bottom. There's only three guys that were worse from them. And this is not company you want to be a part of. Tim Tebow, some guy from the Eagles named Mike McMahon, I don't remember him. And Akili Smith. Remember Akili Smith of the Bengals?
Yes.
Those ahead of Richardson? Oh, Jamarcus Russell, Ryan Leaf.
Yeah.
Look ahead 2 weeks. Like, I really thought, boy, this is going to be a trap game, Bills and Colts, and who knows, maybe I'll start acting like that, getting all nervous and jerky, but right now it doesn't look so scary, does it? Bills going to Indy in 2 weeks.
I think the sample size is large enough, and I'll say it. I don't think Richardson's the dude.
He's got the arm. You see that long arm, but that was the knock on him coming out. Like, he's just not at all.
He's all over the place.
Yeah.
He's all over the place.
It's funny, like, bringing up Jamarcus Russell. That's exactly like Jamarcus Russell could throw a great deep ball, and then what are you doing?
He's an unbelievable athlete, has a cannon for an arm, and they haven't been able to reel it in yet. I just don't think he's the dude. Every time you turn the ball over, I mean, you see it in the NFL time and time again, a costly turnover, the wrong time of a game, and the team just turns on you. It happens a lot with Richardson, and I know it's not a large sample size, but for me, it's large enough. Joe Flacco is there. Joe Flacco gives them a better chance to win football games. I'm sorry, he does. And Richardson probably would benefit from learning from Joe Flacco. I don't think that they're going to do that. I think it's going to come to the detriment of their team. And I don't know that Richardson is going to make some sort of meteoric leap here in season. Really, the only chance you have, or the only hope you would have if you're a Colts fan, is that this offseason he spends more time working on his accuracy, more time. I'm not going to question his work ethic. I'm sure he's going to work his ass off in the offseason. But whatever he did last offseason didn't translate to this season. He looks as inaccurate as he did when he was in Florida at the beginning of last year. And I'm sorry, I think the sample size is big enough. I think you know within six games whether or not you've got somebody, whether or not he's the dude. And I don't think he's the dude.
Well, and for a lot of us, hey, I haven't had a chance to sit down and watch Indianapolis Colts football. You know, you get your chances coming week. They flex that game. It's Colts and Vikings on Sunday night. Like, wait a second. I thought the whole idea of flex scheduling was to give you a good game.
What was the game that was in there? In
Philly and Jacksonville.
That's right. It's a better game than Philly-Jacksonville.
It feels like, oh, we didn't realize the Vikings would be good. Here you go.
Yeah. Well, we want to get to Minnesota before the weather gets too cold. Let's go to Minnesota before the snow starts flying. We have to deal with travel delays. This was fun, Gino. When I saw this story in the aftermath of the Panthers and the Broncos, I was wringing my hands. I'm like, oh, good. I hope we talk about this.
Oh, yeah. This was, so Panthers, Denver game kind of went, the way expected, right? It was a 28-14, ended up being the final. Part of that was like a late garbage touchdown for Carolina. The play in question here is it's a 28-7 score. They're trotting out Will Lutz try a 60-yard field goal attempt. Oh, it's a fake. Oh, mm-hmm. It's in the fourth quarter. Like, we have unwritten rules when it comes to that. So J.C. Horn, well, we shouldn't have. That's my whole take here. J.C. Horn of the Panthers caught a mic. This is the post-game handshake, you know, where everybody kind of congregates at midfield. Approaching Denver head coach Sean Payton, and Horn is upset. He felt Denver was running up the score. Woo! Woo!
Yeah.
Like, come on. I think we need to modify a rule here in the sports bar, Danger. High school or youth, no. Never do it. Never, never, never in high school.
Don't run up the score.
Pros, you're getting paid. Do whatever you want. If you don't like it, well, then get somebody else in there. Do your job, JC. The modification on this, if Dabo or Brian Kelly wants to run up the score, well, fine. You're getting paid now at that level, too.
Yeah, and I thought it was funny that this was Sean Payton running up the score, the guy who had 70 dropped on him last year with his team that basically quit while they were in Miami, right? Maybe run up the score when you get to the postseason, because it feels like Payton, when he does eventually get to the postseason, that's where points are at a premium. It becomes a little bit more of a struggle for his teams. I have zero problem with them running up the score, or trying to run up the score. And his reaction, his response, hey, be better. Yes,
yeah.
You're professionals. Be better. And that, I hope that's a wake-up call for Carolina. You are professionals. You are still an NFL franchise. Can you start acting like one and give us a little bit of a product that we can watch? You do not resemble a professional football team at this stage of the season. Although Bryce Young throwing a pick made. And a little extra cash on that one too, Gino. Oh, it was a good day. It was
wow.
A good day.
What were the odds on that? Shocking he threw a pick.
What was it? Oh, I made it as part of a parlay. Threw it in as part of a parlay. Over a half an interception. Yeah, I think Bryce Young's good for that. All right, we haven't talked about this yet, but this brought you joy before you even watched the Bills bring you joy.
Time out. Is it wrong to find joy when others are suffering? I'm asking honestly.
It depends on who is the person who's suffering.
I don't. We have friends of this particular team you're going to bring up, friends of the show, that I don't find joy in them being down and out and rolling their eyes.
No, but I think if you're a fan of this team at this point, you have to be rolling your eyes with us. You have to be. You have to be done with everything, right? You've got to be that level of frustration. Of course, we're talking about the Jets, and the stat is going around. The Jets scored 20-plus points, committed zero turnovers, held their opponent to under 250 yards of offense. The Patriots could not eclipse 250 yards of offense yesterday. From the year 1940 until yesterday, teams were 756-0 when they hit those three metrics. But the Jets lost 25-22. I'm embarrassed that I thought they were going to actually be competitive this year. I couldn't have whiffed more on the Jets just being the Jets.
You're not Mike Clay, who put it out there that the Jets would win the Super Bowl and everybody would be partying in New Orleans.
Oh, my God. This is terrible. So, looking at what the Bills have done so far with the 6-2 start and looking at how down the rest of the division is, let's go ahead. Let's pretend that the playoffs started today. Let's seed them out here, okay?
Gotcha.
In the AFC, you'd have the Chiefs at 1, the Texans, because they got the head-to-head over Buffalo, at 2. The Bills would be your 3 seed. The Steelers are in at 4. The Broncos over Baltimore because of a better conference record. The Ravens would be a 6 seed. The Chargers would be a 7. Now, the Ravens at a 6 seed, that's a scary 6 seed. But sign me up for this, Gino. I like this seeding just as it is. Give me Herbert versus Stroud. Give me Allen versus Lamar for the wild card. I like the Russ revenge game against Sean Payton. Ring the bell. Call the season now through 8 weeks. Let's get this going. If this is how the playoffs are seeded when the season is over, we are in for a treat.
Bills is a 3. Would I sign up for that? Hell yeah, I would. Absolutely. The Ravens falling down to a 6?
You would host the Ravens.
So, in this world, I think Bills fans should be cheering for the Steelers tonight, right? You want the Steelers to win this division. You want Mr. Unlimited.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, the Steelers and the Ravens, and Nate brought it up, and we've said it before, that the AFC North is just going to cannibalize each other. You saw it yesterday with Cleveland beating Baltimore. Those games aren't easy. They're not gimmies. And nobody runs away with that division. And the Steelers still have to play the Ravens twice. It's going to be fun to watch down the stretch. But if the Bills keep stacking wins here, especially during the soft part of their schedule, it's not unrealistic to wonder, can they eclipse the Texans as the two seed? Can they get over on the Chiefs when you know you have a head-to-head coming up against them? Kind of like their chances here and the way they're playing. It's hard to imagine. Man, me and my buddy Tony yesterday, we were watching the game. He's like, man, Detroit and Buffalo is going to be one hell of a Super Bowl. And I looked at him sideways, like, I get Detroit, but Buffalo, he's like, who's beating them? The way they're playing right now, who's beating them? I'm like, okay, let's go through the exercise. And Baltimore is a team that, you know, we have recency bias towards because we saw what they did on a Sunday night in Baltimore. The Bills are very capable right now of being the one seed. They're very capable right now of representing the AFC. I think you have to call them a Super Bowl contender here through 8 weeks.
It's funny how it's all kind of shaping up, and the hype is only going to get louder and louder for that game on the 17th. Tay-Tay in attendance, too, we would assume on that. Yeah. You love yourself a good take, right?
Oh, always.
Now, this is one of those takes I'm going to read to you, and then you're going to like, and then it's going to stop you dead in your tracks and be like, wait, could this actually happen?
The rules of a good take, in my opinion, a take that splits the audience, that makes you think twice. It either makes you mad and angry, or you think about it and like, oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah, I actually agree with that.
This falls into that category because you're going to hear this and you're going to be like, no, this doesn't make any sense because you're bringing up the Jets and where do the Jets go from here, right? This is Seth Walder of ESPN. If I'm the Chiefs or Bills, I'm calling the Jets about Davante Adams.
Sure.
The Jets should tear everything down after all that, right? They should.
Right. At what point do you actually say, we were wrong, the quarterback isn't going to solve all the problems, and he hasn't solved any problems, and we're actually in worse shape now than we were last year when he was on IR?
Adams as a Chief would scare me. And wouldn't the Raiders be like, are you kidding me? Like,
right.
Directly.
Right. That would be shocking. But I get it. It makes all the sense in the world. It makes a lot of sense. If you're the Jets, yeah. So, I mean, I think Mike Williams probably more likely to be a guy that could end up with the Chiefs.
Right. Maybe even Garrett Wilson, which if they're taking calls on Garrett Wilson, they shouldn't. But
now at this point, you're like, okay, what's it worth? What's it worth for us to invest? Is it worth a second round pick for Garrett Wilson? I would give up a second round pick for Garrett Wilson. They probably want a first. Would you give up a first-round pick for Garrett Wilson?
The Jets should put a for-sale sign on everything between now. You know, that's next Tuesday, by the way. We're 8 days away from the trade deadline.
The Bills have more wins, have as many wins as the rest of the division combined. I don't think it's premature to talk about when they can lock up the division.
First of all, happy birthday to our buddy Dan Fates, who joins us every Thursday. His birthday was yesterday.
Yay!
I texted him yesterday. I thought it was a little... It was good radio, mind you, but when we brought up the question to him, and I thought it was a legit question, like, when do the Bills clinch the division here? Like, his response was almost like, you guys are getting way ahead of yourself. That was kind of the vibe I got off that. We're not... Like, when? Like, if you beat Miami, you're 5 games up on the Dolphins. Actually, I'm wrong. 6, because you would have the 10-10.
You're about halfway through the season.
Yes.
And you've got complete command of the division. I don't see the Jets or the Dolphins all of a sudden reclaiming any sort of glory from the Buffalo Bills in this division. It feels over. It feels like the fight is over.
It's over to the fact of if the Bills are locked in as a seed, we're going to have that week's 18 game, well, 17th game of the season, Mitchell Trubisky, a quarterback.
Yeah, it means nothing for the Bills, right? Yeah, a little rest game for Josh Allen. Well, let's talk about that and more next. We'll go back to the Buffalo Bills and the Seahawks. We'll look ahead to the Dolphins on Sunday. Ryan Talbot, our buddy from NewYorkUpstate.com, covering the Buffalo Bills, joins us next on The Fan.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan Rochester.
The Fan Rochester. Sports Update.
Bills at 6-2 on the season in command of the AFC East. This following the blowout win at Seattle. Sean McDermott giving his thoughts on the W.
We knew we were going to have to play well in all three phases, and I think we did, at least at this point, enough to get the result that we were looking for. But there's definitely things, again, that we have to improve on. Pre-snap penalties and the penalties overall, and then just some decision-making.
Now it's on to the Dolphins. We'll talk to Ryan Talbot, NewYorkUpstate.com. He's joining us next year in the Sports Bar. Monday Night Football has the Giants and Steelers. Also on Monday night, it's Game 3 of the World Series in the Bronx. The Yankees sending Clark Schmidt. The Dodgers countering with Walker Buehler. L.A. up 2-0. Buffalo Sabres looking to make it 4 in a row tonight. They host Florida. Our coverage will begin at 7. Gene Battaglin, the sports leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan Rochester.
Top Shelf Sports Talk. You're hanging out in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan, Rochester.
You know, our staff has got him rolling, knows what he's doing. And you know, when he knows what he's doing, he's rolling. He's a damn good football player. He's continuing to make plays for us. You know, and you'd love to see that from your young guy, and he's only going to get better.
Bills quarterback Josh Allen and his rookie wide receiver Keon Coleman had himself a day in Seattle as we welcome in Ryan Talbot from NewYorkUpstate.com. And boy, Ryan, for all of the talk around the draft when the Bills selected Keon Coleman, it's just shocking to me that Kansas City would let him slide the way he did right into Buffalo's lap. How are you, bud?
I am doing great. Yeah, stunning that the Chiefs missed that opportunity and Carolina as well with the Bills, you know, moving down twice. So it's looking pretty good for Buffalo right now.
Ryan, your thoughts on the win yesterday? Because to me, I don't know when. Well, I do know. Like, for me, it's like when I'm seeing two Seattle players fight, like, okay, they're not coming back and winning this game here. I was just actually surprised it was actually that easy yesterday going from coast to coast. What are your thoughts on what you saw out in Seattle yesterday?
Yeah, that was a dominant performance as any we've seen from Buffalo, especially on the road, cross country. The fact that Seattle has played some pretty good football at times this year. I know they went 3-0, lost 3, then won their fourth game before this matchup. But Geno Smith was playing at a high level. They had a great 1-2 punch in Kenneth Walker and Charbonnet. And, I think at the end of the day, they probably didn't run those two enough to try to establish the run. But Buffalo shot them down, stopped them for, they each averaged 1.3 yards per carry in that matchup. So it shows you how stout they were up front defensively and on offense, you know, minus that one interception where Amari Cooper fell, they were rolling. They were getting into these first and 20, second and long situations due to penalties. And they acted like it was absolutely nothing in terms of how easy it was for them to get out of those situations. You look at Khalil Shakir, who, again, every target thrown his way, he caught except for the one that was batted at the line. So sure-handed as ever, picking up the yards after the catch. Keon Coleman, you know, that one-hand grab was spectacular, but my goodness, some of the blocks he had in yesterday's game aren't being talked about enough and how dominant he was there. And the list just goes on. I mean, offense, defense, even special teams with Andreessen coming on with a huge hit on special teams. They won in all three phases yesterday, and like I said, it's not easy to win in this league, and to cruise to such an easy win against a capable opponent was impressive.
Ryan, I want to go back to the wide receivers because he didn't have a big statistical day, but I do think Amari Cooper at minimum has made it easier for Josh Allen to find Keon Coleman, Khalil Shakir. Teams have to kind of focus on that guy and mind where he is on the field. Talk a little bit about the impact, although it wasn't statistical, on yesterday's game.
No, absolutely. I mean, he is their number one receiver, so you have to pay attention to him. And, you know, credit to Coleman. There were a few times where he was matched one-on-one with Reek Woolen, their number one cornerback, scored the touchdown early in that game, and he also drew a pass interference penalty. So Coleman was doing against their best corner at times while also getting after, you know, Josh Jobe, a guy that they elevated from the practice squad. But when Cooper is getting all that attention, that's what makes life so much easier for a rookie like Coleman. And for Khalil Shakir, for as good as he is, you know, teams are starting to game plan for him a little bit before this trade and trying to take away the middle of the field where he does so much great work. And now they can't do that. Throw in Dalton Kincaid, who I know the overall stat line is modest with only 31 yards receiving, but he scores a touchdown. He's getting 7 targets now, where targets were kind of hard to come by before this trade because teams were double-teaming him, putting a lot of guys in the area or the vicinity where he generally traveled. It's opened up things for everyone, and it's also helped the run game too because, you know, when the pass game's flying on all cylinders, that helps the run game. And you saw James Cook absolutely dominate yesterday, averaging 6.5 yards per carry.
Yeah, we're talking to Ryan Talbot, NewYorkUpstate.com. As I also want to give a little hat tip to the Bills Mafia here, Ryan. Gosh, I'm old enough to remember, well, the Bills fan base, they didn't travel. I mean, that wasn't the way it was, particularly during the drought. But they travel, I would say, Ryan, just about as good as anyone. I never thought we would see a day where I always thought the 12s in Seattle, that was a really tough place to play, and they're going to make it really loud. And it was actually the Seahawks had trouble admitting after the game that they were having some issues with the crowd noise working against them.
Yeah, quite a testament to the fan base when Geno Smith comes out there and says at times it felt like a road game for them with how loud the Bills fans were being. And There was a graphic, I cannot remember the site that said it, but they projected the Bills would have 57% of the fans in attendance in that game, and I don't think it was ever that high. But it was still such a big chunk of the crowd that you could hear them. You saw them, you know, on social media posts, whether it's at the airport and they're doing the shout song, post-game, they're having some guy out in the streets playing Mr. Brightside, and they're all gathered around there. Singing, they travel in such high numbers. And the other part of it is too that the Bills backers bars are everywhere in the U.S. and there's a big crowd there in general. So I think fans are looking for any reason to kind of get on the road and check out some of these other stadiums and environments. And right now with the Bills playing the way they have the last few years, you know, what better time than to go and travel and try to experience a Bills road game?
Ryan, I want to be in the moment, and it's a victory Monday, and there's not a lot to complain about when you talk about how the team played. And we mentioned a player who had himself a really, really nice game and has had a really good season up to this point, so much so that I think it's unquestioned that he is a star at his position, and that's James Cook. So my question is, how do you think Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott deal with a star running back, seeing that's a position that they've never really paid since they've been together?
And you don't want to just say, oh, the Bills just need to move on when that contract's up, although that is kind of still how I feel. It's tough because the running back position, I do think there are teams that are maybe reevaluating the importance of it. You look at a Saquon Barkley and, you know, what he can do for an offense in Philadelphia throughout the year. He's had a nice season. And what some of these premier backs have done, it feels like this year has been one of the first years in a long time where there haven't been nearly as many running back by committees, and it's been one guy kind of running the show. But the way you allocate your resources, it's hard for me to justify paying big money to James Cook, despite the fact that he is explosive as a runner. The vision's improved. The receiving is great as well. I know, you know, 3 targets, 3 catches yesterday. He had some bad drops last year, but he can do it all. The only problem is you can generally get pretty good backs in the middle rounds of NFL drafts. And Ray Davis only had 6 carries, but he was averaging 4.8 yards per clip. And you saw how he looked in the game that Cook did not get to play in and how dominant he was on the ground. So there's talent there. I just have a hard time saying the Bills would be willing to break the bank for Cook when you look across the landscape. One, they already have a ton of money invested in some premier players on this roster, and then you still have to consider Christian Benford, Greg Rousseau, Khalil Shakir before long. And I think all 3 of those guys leapfrog Cook, despite him being such a great player. So it's unfortunate in terms of what it could mean down the road with Cook going elsewhere. I think that the Bills should at least throw an offer out there to him or say, go out and test the market, come back to us with a number, and we'll see if we can come close to it. But there's just so many other positions that I think teams have to prioritize before that.
We're talking to Ryan Talbot, NewYorkUpstate.com. You can also catch him and Matt Perino on the Shout Football Podcast. And Ryan, there is going to be one change this week, and coming back from the four-game suspension, Von Miller, as the Bills with Dwayne Carter going on IR, they don't have to do a corresponding move. There is a vacant spot there. But my question is about Miller here, because do you just plug him back in and give him the reps he was getting before? I don't know necessarily if that's a given here, seeing the way that the Bills have played in the last two games.
Well, then your first game back to a guy that's in his mid-30s, you probably need to ramp him up a little bit, which I think the Bills would be okay with, because, you know, Greg Rousseau in the 4 weeks that Von Miller has been out has been near or at the top of the league in terms of quarterback pressures. And, yeah, you want to see him finish those plays, get some more sacks, some impact plays to back teams up. But the fact that he's driving the quarterback off his mark consistently is a very promising sign. And Dwayne Smoot continues to flash in these games. And you know what? Kudos to the Bills, because when they signed him, I thought this might just be just another guy. He was coming off of a serious injury. Didn't look nearly as explosive last year in Jacksonville. And lo and behold, he's really come along nicely and made plays for this unit. AJ Epenesa continues to make a play here and there for this team, getting pressures. Javon Solomon, I mean, his sack was pretty much, he just raced to Geno Smith first as Smith fell to the ground. But you want to keep developing guys like that. Casey Tuhill gets his hand on a ball. That list goes on and on. They're getting contributions from top to bottom. And you hope that within maybe 1 or 2 weeks, Von Miller's up to speed and you can get him pretty close to where he was. Because I think that the way Rousseau is playing, if you can get Miller the way he was in those first three games especially, getting the pressures, getting some sacks, that could be very promising for this pass rush unit, which has lacked consistency. They have those flashes of a few games in a row, but I think that the combination of Miller and Rousseau could really lead to good things in terms of frustrating some good quarterbacks that are on the horizon here in the near future.
Ryan, staying with the defense, we've kind of seen through the course of this season, if there's a weakness to the Bills' defense, it's their rush defense, that you can run the ball against the Buffalo Bills, but it didn't happen yesterday, and you saw Seattle only gain 43 yards on the ground. Was that a function of anything that you saw differently from this Bills defense, or was that just a function of Seattle just having a bad game plan against the Bills defense and not going to their stud back, Kenneth Walker, who's somebody that we were nervous about going into Sunday's game?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of both. I mean, they didn't even try to establish the run. This team currently in Seattle is the exact opposite of what Pete Carroll was trying to do when he was their head coach. They were establishing the run, using that to kind of grind on teams and then go to the pass at times, mix it in there, obviously. But this was such a pass-heavy offense that I feel like they never really gave Walker a chance to establish himself. And then on those few carries where he did get the ball, the Bills were just stout up front. And, you know, kudos again to Daquan Jones, Ed Oliver, obviously Austin Johnson had a really nice game yesterday too. Ilyanku really popped for me too, watching that game live. I'll have to go back and rewatch it, but they pressed the right buttons in terms of who to elevate and how they wanted to play against this team. But I think at the end of the day too, Seattle, it's on them to really try to get their backs going, because as I mentioned earlier, they have a really good 1-2 punch. They just need to get them more involved in this offense.
Ryan, when last we saw the Miami Dolphins match up against the Buffalo Bills, it was a short week for Buffalo. The Bills went down there, and all the concerns we had quickly melted away. The Bills took care of business in that game, and really in the division, they haven't looked back since. So now we get Miami again, and you get the Dolphins coming off a tough loss at home. Miami four games back in the win column. Who would have thought that? Is there any cause for concern other than the fact that it's a divisional opponent here and those, you know, strange things can happen from time to time?
Yeah, strange things can happen from time to time, but Buffalo's just been so dominant against Miami that even with Miami's back against the wall, because you could argue that this is their season on Sunday. If they don't win this game, how do you sit there and not become sellers at the trade deadline, try to get some more draft assets to improve your roster going forward? And you know, you look right now, and it seems like they're going to be shorthanded in this matchup against Buffalo. They said that Bradley Chubb still isn't ready to return, which would have given them a nice boost there. Javon Holland had a pretty serious knee injury yesterday, and although they haven't ruled him out for Sunday yet, I think that it would be in the same thing as that DK Metcalf bucket. He's listed as week to week. I don't know how you can show up on the field in 1 week's time and be able to play a game. So those are two big guys on defense. We've already seen the way that Josh Allen has picked that defense apart over the years, including early on this season. Defensively, I know Bobby Babich is calling the game plan, but Sean McDermott has his thumbprint all over it, and you know all week they're going to talk about what they've done over the years to really frustrate Tua in that passing attack and how they've really limited the receiving game there with Waddle, with Hill never looking like that explosive big play threat when he goes against the Bills. So if things stay the same, which I have no reason to think they won't, I think there's a good chance Terrell Bernard's back in this game. The Bills would be very healthy on both sides of the ball entering it. It's hard for me to sit here and say, minus the Dolphins throwing the absolute kitchen sink, every trick play, everything that they could possibly try to throw the Bills off, maybe whatever the 2024 version of the Wildcat would be, I guess. I don't see how they can come into Buffalo and win this game.
All right, so all that being said, Ryan, are we premature in trying to figure out when the Bills will have the division locked up? Because it feels halfway through the season here that it's their division to lose, and not only that they're going to be comfortable when they get to the final two or three games of the season.
You know, I don't think that's unfair at all. And, you know, the Jets supposedly this past week was supposed to be the start of their run because their schedule softened up significantly. Well, they lose to the Patriots, and I get it, it's a divisional game, but the Patriots have not looked very good up until minus that week one game against Cincinnati, and they came out and they fought tooth and nail. And if they had capable wide receivers in New England, I think they pull away with that game. Just so many bad drops by the Patriots in that matchup, but they still find a way to win. And now it's a short week. It's Thursday Night Football against the Texans. And, you know, the Texans might be without Stephon Diggs, depending on the severity of his injury, but I still think that there's enough talent there on that Houston team to knock the Jets again. And if the Jets lose, it's the same situation as the Dolphins. Unless Joe Douglas knows he doesn't have a job next year, he needs to go into seller mode, try to get as many assets as he can, because what they're doing now isn't working. They can't just spin a wheel and bring in a former Packer anymore and hope that it's going to fix everything on that team, because it just hasn't happened. Adams was the ace up their sleeve that was supposed to fix everything, and their offense really has not looked that much better. I will say that Garrett Wilson's made the most of his opportunities, especially yesterday, but for the most part, that offense has really struggled, and it doesn't make sense because there is a lot of talent there.
Ryan Talbot, NewYorkUpstate.com, our guest. And, Ryan, I don't know if we'll have a chance to talk to you before the NFL trade deadline. And you brought up teams that should sell. What's your gut telling you about Brandon Bean here? Because you know what? If we asked Brandon Bean, if we had him on, he'd be like, oh, I'll always look at something, you know, to make my team better. We'll always take a look at it, you know, as he should. Like, he's probably working the phones right now. But when push comes to shove, do you see the Bills making another move? And if you were the GM, like, What would you shop for here at the trade deadline?
I would be looking exclusively for the defensive side of the ball, and you could sell me on multiple positions. I know we just talked about the defensive end position or the edge rusher position getting contributions up and down, but if you could go out and get a premier player there, which that'll be hard to do. You'd have to make the contracts work in terms of who you could possibly get off the edge, but the Browns have a few guys, not named Myles Garrett, obviously, but they have some options there that I think would be intriguing in Buffalo. Defensive tackle would probably be my number one target just because of the depth, knowing that Carter is on the IR for 3 more weeks. See if you can add there. Linebacker, I think, is a sneaky high. I don't want to say need, but something that Brandon Bean might be considering. I know you're probably getting closer to ramping up Matt Milano, but who knows how many weeks that will take. Terrell Bernard looks like he's on a good track to potentially play on Sunday, but he's missed a game this past week on Sunday, and he missed a few games earlier on in the year with a pectoral strain. You need to have someone else kind of waiting in the wings there, because yesterday the one area where Seattle was very successful was attacking the linebacker position. Dorian Williams had a very rough outing. Baylen Specter has not looked good when he's been given those extra reps. So linebacker's high on my list. And you could make the case for safety as well, although I feel like the Rapp-Hamlin combination has done a lot better than most people were probably expecting going into this year.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with that for a second, Ryan, because I think you're right. A lot of questions about Rapp and certainly about Hamlin, given their history with the Bills, but you're pleasantly surprised by what you've gotten out of both of them. And I think Rapp specifically, you go back to that Jets game, and he was, you know, playing with his hair on fire. I guess my question is, if you're Cole Bishop, if you're Mike Edwards, I know Edwards, at least I feel like Edwards has shown some outward frustration on social media. What's your take on Bishop and Edwards kind of waiting in the wings here in their roles here? And you know, when you invest a second round pick in Bishop, I would imagine at some point we're going to see him on the field, and maybe it's not this season.
You know, for Bishop, it's a good problem to have, in my opinion, and maybe he wouldn't see it that way. For all the intangibles, for every reason that I know why Brandon Bean would love a player like that, there was going to be some growing pains, whether he was on the field or not. I think learning from the sideline isn't the worst scenario for him, because you haven't needed him minus one game this year. And when you threw him out there, he did have the big gaffe or big mistake where he let up the long touchdown against the Texans. So learning on the sidelines for 1 year is not a bad problem. I think that coming into year two, his grasp of the playbook would be even better. He'd be more comfortable in the system, and then you can let those natural athleticism and traits show through, where sometimes you also need to have a really good, you know, knowledge of the game. You might not have all the intangibles like a DeMar Hamlin, for instance. Hamlin doesn't have anywhere close to the intangibles of a Cole Bishop, but he knows where he's supposed to be at all times. He has been a sound tackler. He had some great tackles in the game on Sunday, for instance, and those are important parts of the game. So for Bishop, not a big deal. For Mike Edwards, yeah, definitely frustrated. The injury that he and Bishop both suffered during training camp have loomed large in terms of their opportunities this season. And for Edwards, you know, you look, and we just said, Rapp and Hamlin playing very good. Cole Bishop's kind of next in line as that second-round pick. And then, oh, by the way, Cam Lewis is doing a really nice job as a former UDFA, and when he gets on the field, no matter what role you're kind of throwing him in there, he's making plays in the middle of the field, getting hands on passes, and he has more versatility than what Mike Edwards brings to the table. So that's why Edwards continues to be inactive. But, you know, if the Bills can go out and find a guy that they feel like is an upgrade over Hamlin, you can bump Hamlin to number three, move Bishop to number four, and probably outright release Mike Edwards in that scenario, then by all means, go and do it. But call around. Za'Darius Smith, as I was saying, in Cleveland, he and Garrett yesterday had 18 total pressures against the Ravens. We saw the issues Buffalo had against Baltimore earlier this season. Get a guy that, you know, knows how to win against that team. Bolster your edge position. If I'm Brandon Bean, I'm calling about any and every defensive position on this roster, looking for ways to upgrade it, just like the Chiefs did today, adding Josh Uche. Uche is not necessarily a premier name, but he's a solid young player that I think can make some big-time plays from time to time.
Yeah, thanks, New England, for doing that, sending it to Kansas City. Appreciate that. Ryan Talbot, NewYorkUpstate.com. Tell everybody what's coming up on the website and when we can check out this week when the new episodes of the Shout podcast will drop, Ryan.
Yeah, we'll have our Wednesday staple show, a preview show on Friday. In terms of articles up, well, you know, I'm about to publish the Pro Football Focus grades from yesterday in terms of how the team fared. Matt and I are hopefully this week going to put up an article on potential trade targets. So seems like a good time to do that with the trade deadline coming up here in the near future. So those are two things on the horizon. You can check that out at Syracuse.com or NYAP.com.
Appreciate the time as always, Ryan. Enjoy your week, and let's talk again soon.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks.
Ryan Talbot, New York Upstate, Syracuse.com. You can read his work there and check out the Shout podcast with Matt Parrino, his partner in crime, who will be joining us tomorrow afternoon to talk more Bills at 325.
This was as dominant a road win for Buffalo since, well, certainly this year. I'd have to go back to last year. I mean, the game was not in question to the point where we're discussing 2025 contract issues, which is, it's totally fine.
Yeah.
But it does bring into focus, all right, when you're seeing these guys, they know. Like, James Cook knows if he continues to put up 100-yard, two-touchdown games, if Greg Rousseau continues to get to the quarterback and be top five in pressures.
Right. I wonder how, you know, like, I wonder how they just manage it all. you know, if you're Brandon Bean, how are you managing it all? How are you looking at these deals and the future deals that you're going to have and managing it with the guys who want to be paid the highest at their position, knowing if you're going to pay X player to be the highest at his position, it's going to be at the detriment of another position of need or value. How do they value it? And up to this point, Bean and McDermott haven't put the kind of value on running back that you've seen other teams do. And James Cook may change that. And maybe you can get away with it if you're not putting a value on wide receiver, like we've seen some teams do. And certainly with no Steph Diggs on the roster, you don't have that giant dollar figure committed to the wide receiver position. At least looking ahead to next year, you don't.
Yeah. So the one, they took care of Spencer Brown. Greg Rousseau, you didn't have to worry about because you have the fifth-year option. It's that 2022 class. And ironically, the one guy you could tag, you're not going to want to. Kyrie Elam is still on this team, trust me. But you know, like he can't get on the field. But in this class, Danger, Cook, Bernard, Shakir, Benford. Oh, and then you have Spectre, who I'm sure you want to keep around. Matt Ariza, too. That 2022 class is, you think it's way down the future. No.
Yeah.
No, we're going to start talking about it. Yeah.
It's coming up. Happy hour next on The Fan Rochester. We'll continue to discuss yesterday's win. We love your calls at 866-4FAN, 585-866-4326. If you want to pull up a stool and join us.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.